I am Sam J. Jones, Flash Gordon.
Okay. Oh, excuse me.
That's okay. It's been a long day.
The dome always does that to me. Okay. It's good to be seen. It really is.
And you're listening to Sci-Fi Saturday Night.
We will begin a mass invasion. We'll tell your people to surrender now. And avoid war.
Don't think you get me so easily!
It is now time for us to put Earth under our rule.
It's your sacred duty to tell us the truth. Confess that you've been guilty of witchcraft.
You expect me to believe that you can overrun the entire world?
We cannot be defeated. We have never been defeated. That is the message.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Sci-Fi Saturday Night.
Welcome to yet another edition of Area 51 recordings of Sci-Fi Saturday Night. We're one of the only podcasts guaranteed that if you listen, you hear stuff. If you don't listen, well, I don't know what you're doing now instead of listening. This is podcast number 463. We got our numbering system screwed up for a while. Not sure why that happened. I think I was confused for a while, but I'm not sure if I was confused or not. So whether I was or not, this could actually be TalkCast number 26. Not sure. We're still in pandemic mode. Evidently, it's gotten worse instead of better because people are dumb. And the intertubes being what they are, people are Skyping each other and having these meetings where they only have to be dressed from the waist up, which can be very disconcerting when somebody stands up by mistake, which is why these are audio podcasts instead of video podcasts. So joining me tonight in Area 51, sitting down, thankfully, is... Captain Cam here in Area 51 with me. Captain Cam, thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you for sitting down.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I mean, I don't know why you're complaining. If Donald Duck can get away with it.
Oh, no, and... No Donald Duck not wearing pants jokes tonight.
Well, I was just talking about the sailor suit, the sailor's hat.
No, I've seen you in your Donald Duck costume. When we did the Halloween Skype thing, and that was just very, very, very frightening. Very frightening. And I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. Okay. I'm the dome. I sit here and do stuff and read stuff and look at stuff. And so here's the deal on tonight's show. We get books. We get a lot of books. And the reason we get a lot of books right now is because of the pandemic. Because normally we'd be going to conventions, which are no longer happening. Thank you, Mr. COVID. Or I'm assuming it's a masculine gender. I have no idea why. And you know, it's coming up on the holiday surge from the idiots who flew during Thanksgiving. And after that, we'll have the idiot surge from all the idiots who flew for Christmas, because everybody knows that the best time to get a pandemic is during the holiday season. So people are sending us books to read, and so we're doing a lot of reading, which... it's kind of redundant because I think I already said that. But the best thing is that some of the people who are sending us books are writers who have been on the show, who we really love, and who write really, really well. And so we got a book a couple of weeks ago from someone who we really, 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 really like, who wrote... The Blue Helix series, uh, books 1 and 2 in the Blue Helix series, Catherine Hudson. Hey, Catherine.
Hello, Doe and Cam.
Hi.
Hi.
And I was hoping it was book 3 in the Blue Helix series, and yet it wasn't.
It was not. That's still coming.
I know.
To be clear.
to be very clear, we are all waiting for that. It was something weird, something different, something new called The Witching Vault. And it is the first book in a series called Accessory to Magic, Book 1, The Witching Vault. By the way, before we even talk about the book, the cover is so cool.
Thank you. I think I found the cover designer that I may annoy him to death with all the covers that I'm going to have him do for me.
Oh my God. It's incredible. You know, when we first got the book, Cam sent it over and he said, just check out the cover first before you do anything. Uh-huh. Just check out the cover. And I went, oh. Because, you know, there are sometimes, and I won't say who, I'm not mentioning any names here, but there's sometimes when you look at the cover and you go, wow, ooh, that was a mistake. That was just, no. But
I can say it. At one point in time, that was probably me, not with you guys on your show, but I have been in the mistaken covers group at the very very beginning of my career. It's a learning process.
And it's difficult when you're an independent author and you don't have somebody looking over your shoulder going, you might want to rethink that.
Right. Not a good decision. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know.
It's true. And I can openly admit that I have not always had the best covers, and at the same time I'm very proud of these
movies. Oh my God. This cover's just killer. So I open up the PDF and I started reading it. Now I'm going to start by saying two things. First thing is this. Lately, because I am under intense quarantine, as are we all, as are we should be, anybody who's listening, quarantine, wear a mask, don't be a schmuck, wear a mask everywhere. Wear it at home. I don't care. It helps. Flatten the curve, dummy. Was I strong enough? Was I too strong there?
I think you're too subtle, Dub. You know, I really think you should express yourself better.
Okay,
just good. Saying.
Don't hold back.
Good. Because, you know, God forbid, I don't want to alienate my audience. So, one of the things that I do is when I'm reading now, I tend to kind of lock myself in the Area 51 Fortress of Solitude here and play music really, really loud while I'm reading. And it kind of helps me keep out the stupidity of the world. Well, I'm focusing on the book. And I was listening to Jefferson Airplane as I was reading this.
Ooh.
And, you know, Gracie Slick screaming, one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small.
Oh.
And the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all.
we're just
wonderful. It just surrealistic pillow just kind of just melded into this book so beautifully. So that was the music that I was listening to as I was reading this. And I had that album on loop as I was reading this book the entire way through. The other thing that I just want to say before we get talking about the book is I kind of have a rule, kind of one of these internal things that say, by 45, 50 pages in, if I'm not hooked, if I'm not, if something hasn't really caught me, be it a character, be it a theme, be it a thought, be it a concept, it's really hard for me to want to continue with it. There are times when I'll push forward, but a lot of times that I just, it just won't happen, even if I do push forward with it. 45 sentences. And this puppy had me, it may have actually only been 45 words. This book had me literally on the first page. This is truly a special piece of paranormal fantasy literature. I don't know how to describe this. It's describe it for me, please. How do you describe it?
I call it, dark urban fantasy, paranormal, absolutely, suspense and action, absolutely. And I made up a little promo image when I was first learning how to do these things. And the text that I put on the image was blood, snark, and nope, no tears. So, maybe all of that together sums it up.
This is so much fun to read. You're not talking, blood, gore, guts. I hate you. I want to kill you. I want to die. Everybody die, 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 die. Heavy blood, demons. Blah, blah. It's fun. Yes. The other stuff is there, but it's fun. I had so much fun learning about Jessica Northwood. Jessica Northwood is one of the coolest characters you have ever written. And she's the main character in this book. So tell us about Jessica Northwood. Where did she come from?
Ooh, where did she come from? Well, in a lot of ways, Jessica is me. As I, tend to put quite a bit of myself these days into my main characters. But with a super fun spin, she is a witch, a very special kind of witch that isn't entirely revealed in book one.
Yes, I noticed.
Yeah. on purpose. But we do get to see her insane power at the end. Not nearly as much power as she used to have, because Jessica Northwood is also an ex-con who spent a year in magical prison and was recently released on parole. And she's got quite the criminal past that we still don't get to see in book one. And she casts a spell on herself called the Shattering that took half of her magic out of herself, and she keeps it locked up in a box in her underwear drawer, as a souvenir, perhaps, or as a warning to herself to never make the same mistakes again that she made that got her into prison in the first place. And she is so stubborn, and is just trying to find her way again after she's been institutionalized for something that she did. I don't want to give any spoilers away, and now it's like kind of mixing in my head with book two as well. So, there aren't many hints as to what she went to prison for in book one.
No, there are none. There are absolutely none.
Okay.
Yep. I will second that, frustratingly so.
All right. Well, I know it's frustrating. Actually, you know, so many of my advanced readers and reviews that I've already received for this book, people have said, you know, very much the same thing that you guys were saying before the show, is that, like, we don't know anything about Jessica Northwood. Who is she? Where did she come from? What's her backstory? We just get little snippets. And all these readers have said, normally I hate this in books and it drives me crazy, but it fits this story so well, and I'm okay with it.
and I'll second awesome. That. And I'll second right. that statement. Yeah, because I loved it, because it's little bits and pieces, because the little bits and pieces you give us are like, oh, well, this is all I need to know. Oh, she yeah. spent some time away from people. Okay, we'll move along. And then all of a sudden you drop a little hint. It's like, oh, she was in prison. Prison? Well, that's a slightly different story. Okay, but we're moving along with the story. Okay. And then you keep dropping these little nuggets, and then you move off into another tangent of her life, you know, mm-hmm. hinting at maybe past relationships, and then you move on. But each one seems to flow. You're adding it in such a way, in such a slow progression, but in a way that, you know, when we get it, it's coming from a very natural way, you know, like one of the characters in there does a lot of our introduction to Jessica is Tabitha, who mm-hmm. helps introduce us to the character of Jessica. Or I will go back to Sleepwater Beats, which I always loved Sleepwater Beats because you had three beats in it. You had the past, the present, the past, and then you tell us about the world we lived in mm-hmm. using the media of that time. Yeah. And in this story, you slowly give us hints at the world, not through the media in this particular case, but in every customer that walks through the door tells us just a little bit more about the world without, you know, it being, you know, like some narrator going, and thus, you know, this part of the witching kingdom did this and thus. No, it's just they walk in and it's quite natural. And it feels very natural when you listen to these characters. When you listen to Miss Power Suit, your name, not the one I'm giving her, or the dwarf, who is now my favorite character personally.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, each one of us tells us a little bit more about this world out here. And you then have to kind of make some judgments, you know, because all these characters have their own backgrounds, like Leandris is another character, you know. Do we trust them? Do we not? Should mm-hmm. Jessica trust them? And it's like a mystery novel in some ways unfolding on us, because we have to make our own decisions as readers as do we trust these characters that are coming into, you know, her establishment. And it's just yeah. it's wonderfully done.
And the weirdest part of this whole thing is that it's not until halfway through the first novel, and I don't think I'm giving away any great spoiler by saying it, that you realize that there's a character that you're really kind of totally unaware of, and that is a building.
Yep.
That the building itself, Winthrop and Gildridge Security Banking, is itself a main character of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It has The building has a mind of its own. The building has its own agenda. The building and Jessica work together in the same way that the building and Tabitha worked together.
Yeah.
And they sometimes at cross purposes.
Yeah, quite a bit, actually.
And it's almost hilarious for Tabitha, I mean, for Jessica to realize that she's living within the confines of a sentient building.
Right.
And the people who walk in and out of this bank have no idea that that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Where the hell did that come from?
Well, the idea for just a magical bank in and of itself, first of all, was something I had been toying with in my head for a while. And you know, I like the idea of having a little place tucked away in the rest of regular society where no one who's human and who doesn't have magic would even pick up on the fact that there's a whole bunch of magic and power stashed away in this rundown bank in Golden, Colorado. And then, you know, the bank's personality and its ability to communicate with Jessica on a much more effective level than in the beginning, really honestly stemmed from a necessity for Jessica to not be locked up within the bank by herself with no one to talk to. And that is really where it came from, honestly. And when I realized that I needed to find a way for Jessica and the bank to actually speak to each other, that's when just all the magic happened. And then the bank really became its own character. And even from the beginning, you know, it had already had a serious attitude problem. And
oh, you mean say please?
Yeah. It wanted Jessica to use her manners, and she was not about that. As most people would not be if they get shocked and tossed around and have doors slammed in their faces by a building. But it was really cool to develop the bank's character as, you know, an entity who really, generally speaking, does not enjoy the majority of people, magicals or humans or what have you, that come to say hello or to, you know, make a transaction within the magical bank. But it chose Jessica for a very specific reason, and it also is struggling with its knowledge and understanding of what it and Jessica have to do working together in order to protect certain valuable things.
would it be honest to say that in the original concept of putting this book together, that character really wasn't there?
Yes. Absolutely. It was there as a, oh, this bank has like attitude and it can do things, you know, it can use its own magic. And Tabitha from the beginning, you know, she seems like a crazy old witch, a crazy old Scryer witch, because she's talking to the walls and she's talking to an immortal lizard named Confucius, and she can't remember Jessica's name, but she can see the future. And so there's this like one-sided conversation that the reader sees and that Jessica sees between Tabitha and the bank. But when I started out, no, I had no intention whatsoever of giving the bank the ability to talk and of giving it as much of a character as it took on. And it, when I did, it was just like, oh, well, of course, this had to be there.
So once again, the character kind of invented itself.
Yes, I think all of my characters do that. They run the show, and I just say, okay, you know, if I struggle with it, it turns into something awful. So I just let them do their thing, and it's working so far. I think.
I became so enamored with what you do with these characters, which is... And I'm totally confounded by how you provide such depth to them while giving us so little context.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Normally, that would be the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Normally, how can I care about someone when I know so very little about them? But with Jessica, you're running her through this series of just horrible things with little or no context, little or no understanding of background, very little understanding of the world that they're in. You're throwing me little bits, just enough so that I'll understand maybe why it's happening, and just enough to want me to want to know more, but never giving me a full picture. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, wow, I want more of this. And each character throws another... You know what it reminds me of?
What does it remind you of, Dom?
I can't wait to hear it. Tell me.
I saw a YouTube video once, and it was one of these just idiotic YouTube videos of a guy who spent 15 days and took a basketball court in a high school auditorium and filled it with mouse traps. And then threw, like, I don't know, like 500 ping pong balls into the center of these mouse traps and just watched it go crazy. Boom, 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 boom. Just one hit another, and it went on for like 5 minutes. Where every it randomly hit another, and it was so randomly fascinating to watch the way things progressed. And when it was all done, I realized I'd been holding my breath for like 5 minutes, you know, barely able to breathe. And as I'm reading this book, I'm watching these things happen to Jessica, and I'm holding my breath, wondering what ping pong ball is going to hit next.
Right.
And what the hell this stupid halibut razorback lizard is going to do? What he has to do with anything?
It's so true. Nobody knows yet. I mean, I know.
And I think it goes to something that I really enjoyed about this book was, much like Jessica, you as the reader never gets a chance to rest. You get to the end, because it's not like, you know, oh, I'm at the end of chapter 12. I'm going to go get myself a nice hot chocolate, maybe go out for a nice walk. What? I now have to find out, well, I can't remember exactly what happened at the end of chapter 12, but why the bank, you know, won't let her out the door. You know, I have, you do such a wonderful job at the end of each chapter of hooking you right into the next chapter and going, okay, here you go. Let's, you know, keep going. And I think it's that energy you produce that's so much fun. And I'm going to assume that, you know, it keeps things running and it keeps things flowing like that. And it's a lot of fun.
I'm so glad you think so. And I'm glad that you brought that up too, you know, that the reader is right there with Jessica, like what's going to happen next and what's coming up. And that was one of the things that I actually really intentionally tried to do with Jessica specifically and within this entire series. And, you know, I know, and you guys touched on this already too, I know that a lot of readers have an issue with not getting the full scope of a character right away, you know, not knowing who they are, not knowing their background, not knowing where they came from or why they do the things that they do. And the whole purpose behind that in my mind for me was because I wanted to take the reader along on this journey with Jessica, and she's just starting out again on her own, you know, like a fresh start, a second chance, so to speak. She's been out of prison on parole for 6 months, and she can't find a place that works for her in terms of a job, in terms of rebuilding her life after whatever happened. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that I always try to bring into all of my work, and you know, with their own various flavors, of course. But, you know, one of my major themes is that, you know, the things we do, the mistakes we make, and all the screw ups that we may have accumulated in our lives and our past don't define who we are in our present and where we're going moving forward. And so that was one of the things that I was trying to keep readers neck and neck with Jessica, because she's trying to keep her past where it belongs in the past. And she is coming into a completely new world. And I love the fact that that seemed to work in a way that I probably with any other story, it wouldn't have worked, even of mine.
It does. It works really well. But I think it was also very nice that you kind of said it within what? It's a 3-day period. You know, and, mm-hmm. and it just you just keep it just rolling right along. But there was something else you hit on that I would mention is, and I want to know, because I'm going to guess it is intentional, because I've very seldom, you know, between Sleep, Water, and now this book, there's nothing I've ever seen you write that isn't intentional. But mm-hmm. she's almost literally traded one prison for another.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least by the end of the book, unless I missed something, she still can't really, really leave the bank, mm-hmm. you know. And so she went from a prison to looking for a job. And all of a sudden, she's now basically in another prison. It's a gilded cage, but it's mm-hmm. still in some ways another prison. And I'm going to assume is that that was intentional, too.
It really was. It was to draw that parallel and to see, you know, give a little glimpse of like, okay, well, how would Jessica have acted when she was in prison? And we get glimpses of that more in book two. But, you know, there's also that juxtaposition around, you know, when she was in prison for a year in magical prison, it was for, I don't want to give any spoilers, but it was a big blow to her and something that was completely unexpected for whatever mistakes she may have made. And this gilded cage prison of the bank is the same in terms of she can't leave, and she's stuck, like she literally physically cannot leave the bank. But also she comes to understand that she can't leave because she has a responsibility. So it's that, you know, choosing something that's seemingly the same, but for a better reason, or I guess experiencing, you know, the same sort of situation, but from two completely different sides of that coin. Whether or not she steps up to the plate and takes full responsibility for what she now has to do within the bank is, you know, that's up to her.
and it's interesting to watch her, you know, sit there between, and she does seem to, at least, you know, from my reading of the book, the closer you get to the end, the more she starts to take responsibility. But at the very beginning, you're watching, you're going, she's just going to walk right out the door. And she slowly, you know, gravitates towards, yeah, this is important. This is a responsibility, instead of, you know, there's just something about her that seems to start taking it more seriously as the book progresses.
Mm-hmm. That was also intentional. Yes, I'm glad that's obvious and that's there. And that's,
yep.
Yeah, you know, like, like I said, you know, there is so much of me in Jessica. And the more I write, the more I realize how much of myself goes into these characters. That, you know, I've been behind a jail cell, you know. I know what that's like. I've never been to prison. I can really say that. But
oh, she's going to ask about that one too. But well,
wait a minute. Her life to us, Dom, is much like Jessica's life to us. You know, we're slowly with each interview getting a little bit more of her, learning a little more. Yeah, no, yeah, you know, we need to get a few more interviews in here so we can get the full story.
I'm thinking you may be absolutely right.
Yeah.
Also, by the time she gets book five out, we'll have at least a little bit more of the story, the more of the Catherine Hudson story.
I'm all for that. I'm very good with that.
Same here.
Oh, wonderful.
The other thing that I did notice too about this book that I found fascinatingly different from the Blue Helix series is that it's much more linear than anything you've written before or that I've read of yours before.
Yes.
And that it's straight line, straight ahead. Purposefully done, I'm assuming, number one. Mm-hmm. and very different in tenor and tone.
Mm-hmm.
Was it difficult for you to change the style to do it that way?
It was not. And so, you know, I've spent the last 2.5 years now ghostwriting fiction as well. And I don't know if we've touched on this on other episodes where I've joined you guys.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a few times. But I've discovered that I am something of a literary chameleon, I suppose. So it was not hard for me at all to switch into a completely different cadence, I guess, for this book. It's all about what fits the book and what fits the story and what fits the characters and what I'm trying to achieve. And I think every single one of my series that are out right now, and this will be the fourth different series, they all read very, very, very differently. And I wonder if anyone would be able to pick up my books without seeing my name and say, oh yeah, this is definitely Catherine Hudson. I'm not sure. But I slip into, I don't know, different personalities. Maybe that's something I need to look into.
You're a multiple personality writer.
Yeah. I think that's a plus, I would say.
I don't disagree with you one bit. Do you prefer one over the other? Do you find one easier? Or is it just this kind of story works this way for me and this kind of story works this way for me?
That is a good question. I can say that writing the Accessory to Magic series has come easier and has been like a faster process for me than any of my other books. And yet at the same time, my schedule has completely changed. My ability to write more of this series, these books in the series, faster has completely changed. I have had all this practice of, you know, the insane number of books that I've written over the last 2 years under my belt. And this was something, you know, that I realized after having ghostwritten urban fantasy for the last 18 months, pretty much exclusively, that I'm actually pretty good at it. It was not something that I ever thought I would ever dive into. And then I decided to take a leap of faith on that. And it comes very easily. So it's, I think to me, you know, the main intention behind these books for me, which is different than what anything I've ever done in the past, was to make it entertaining and fun and fast paced and to have a lot of hooks and to just make it this like can't put it down kind of thing. And I didn't expect it to carry nearly as much depth and weight within the storyline and the themes that I have running through all my books as it does. And so I was very pleasantly surprised by the fact that it's still mine, even though it's a different way of writing for me, at least under my own name, right? it's been easier, I think, yeah. Short answer.
It's the kind of deal, I think, where there's some safety in ghostwriting.
Yeah.
And when the book has your name on it, it's like holding up a sign on a corner saying, hey, this is mine.
Read me. Yeah.
Read me.
Right.
Well, young lady, read me. You know, we've talked to Catherine Hudson on three different occasions. This is the third book of hers we've talked to her about. Each one in its own way has been very special, very different, very dynamic. As Catherine is very special, very different, and a very dynamic writer. This newest book of hers is something that has caught me and Cam and most people who have read it and reviewed it to this point completely off guard because of the way it's written, the style, the intensity. How you take urban fantasy and put such joy into it, because there's an underlying joy to this book that truly is wonderful. So when I say to you that Jessica Northwood is a character that I'm going to remember and I want to read more of, and I want to read a lot more of, I truly mean it. Cam, I think, agrees with me 1,000%.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad.
And we want you back. We want book 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and however many more of these you want to write. It's coming out this week, guys. If you're listening to this when the podcast first comes out, if you're not, shame on you. But it's links to it on Amazon and on her website. It's really cool. Enjoy it. Catherine Hudson, thank you so very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I will always keep coming back as long as you guys are down. I love being here. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, as long as I can take a breath, man, you're always welcome here.
Thank you very much.
And we're done. Sci-Fi Saturday Night is the official podcast of Granite Con, Plastic City Comic Con, and the Upper Valley Comic Expo. We are also sponsored by Dreamforge Magazine, a superb magazine of fantasy and science fiction, and Comic Art House. Visit Comic Art House for some of the best deals on original art from dozens of your favorite artists. And if you're looking for a really great gift book for that rapidly approaching semi-annual Fairbanks Melt Day celebration, consider a look at Sci-Fi Saturday Night's first anthology, My Peculiar Family, now on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. My Peculiar Family, the audiobook, is available on Audible, because I'm not sure where else you can find it. Our intro production was provided by Rob Watts. For more of his amazing stuff, just look at robwattsonline.com. And don't forget to try the Watts sauce we have. We love it. Our outro was provided by Lawrence Made Me Cry. You can find Lawrence Made Me Cry's music on Bandcamp. And a whole lot of love to JoJo and Celine. Many thanks to the gang from his booking books. Thank you, Captain Cam. This is Dome saying, Terry and Jeannie, shared pain is lessened, shared joy increased. Thus do we all refute entropy. Better things are coming, Stacy. Stay strong, Liz. So, unless it's daytime, good night, everybody.